Poetry is heart motion. Poetry as a notion. Poetry was an ocean. Poetry is commotion. Poetry is.
Hello, everybody. I'm Stephen Pitters, and welcome to the Spokane Open Poetry Program here at KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. Folks, you know who you are, and you know who I am, so you know it is time for you to sit back and enjoy some poetry, prose, and at times music here at KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. This is Thin Air Community Radio, and we are on the stream at www.kyrs.org. where the young, the old, and the in-between gather to share their thoughts, feelings, and emotions. My special guest today is the poetess, Lynn Rigney-Schott. Lynn, welcome to the show.
Nice to be here, Steve. Thanks for having me.
All right. The mission of the Spokane Open Poetry Program is to make available to poets and others the opportunity to share their literary works and musical skills. But Lynn, guess what? It is time for the Thank You Minute. So is there anyone that you would like to give a shout out to?
I would like to thank a number of people. I have a little book here that I put together last year with the help of my good friend Dennis Held, and he guided me through all the process of putting a book together, so I finally have a collection, and I would like to thank him for all of his efforts and insights, and also Todd Marshall, our laureate, former laureate for the past 2 years, and he's been very generous with his time and his attention during his tenure as laureate. He's come up to Kettle Falls, to our little community, and read a number of times, and that was great. I'd also like to have a shout out to my wonderful husband, Stephen. The little inscription on the title page of my book is a short piece I wrote one day when we were traveling over to the west side. We stopped along the river on Stevens Pass. This is called Wenatchee River, Stevens Pass. I love the way you love the way the light lands on the water and the water carries it away.
Ooh.
That's for Stephen.
All right, for your Stephen.
For my Stephen. My Stephen.
I'd like to do a quick shout out to some dear friends of mine, my good buddy Charlie down in Austin and Betty in San Antonio, and also Lisa and Christopher and Hallie. Okay, that having been done, I'll let you folks know that I'm going to read one of my poems, and then I'm going to turn this show over to my special guest, Lynn Rigney-Schott. Okay, it's called The Atonement. I had sacrificed my heart to love and whatever feelings it once carried. This precious gem was damaged by her lack of use, yet still expectant. The accidental discovery again of feelings released by a new untested opportunity. Humble the hunger of eating scraps in back alleys and wastrel taverns. These visitors had served to satisfy the recesses throughout my body. I deserve to be appreciated and prized, taken at face value, not the smudge left on someone's back door. I tried not to forestall my worthiness nor my self-esteem when stretched almost to its finality. I hung on to a primal existence which would certify the contention vested by God in all his creatures. No illusion was here haunting tribute, only my love desirous of an acquaintance on this planet with you. You made my need elevate the level of my stature to equal one as elegant and revered as you. No queen deserves less than her king, that she may look up into his eyes and hear his heart's saxophone play Coltrane's Naima's soulful notes, which conveys her appreciation of their impending immortality. So here I am with my love for your love to stay, to which she agreed and said, the measure of our life onward is forged in tungsten steel. If you are just tuning in, this is the Spokane Open Poetry Program here at KYRS Medical Lake Spokane 88.1 and 92.3 FM. Folks, before we get going, I need to just jump out here and make one more bit of share one more bit of information with you. And it's when you go to the KYRS webpage, you'll see many interesting pieces of information. But here's one that you might find useful to you. The front end of a red car, and it says, donate your car, your truck, and boat, and it's easy, and all you have to do is call us at 855-597-7227 to arrange a free pickup, and what you get is a tax receipt. So give us a call right here at 855-597-7227 to arrange that free pickup. And now it is time for us to hear the writings of Lynn Rigney Schott. Lynn, your show.
Thank you, Steve. Excuse me. So we live up in Kettle Falls, to the north, and close to the Columbia River, and lots of beautiful mountains and forests. We grow a lot of food. We have a little farm there. And the first poem I'm going to read has to do with fall harvest. And it's a poem I wrote a long time ago. In fact, it's the first time I ever had contact with my friend Dennis, who then helped me put this book together. He was working at University of Montana and selected this poem years ago to publish in their literary magazine. So this is an early publication. It's called Small Potatoes. They're the ones we can't leave in the ground. The babies not to be abandoned, the next generation. Dirt clings to their inconsequential curves, and I curse at the sink, the scrubbing of these slippery, second-class, undersized excuses for spuds. Every year, it's the same. Waste not, want not, was not wasted on me. Every year, the small thing matters more. Memory condenses and conforms us to its habit. A whole season in a single scent, wisteria, say, or sweet clover, or a year boiled down to the name of a disease. What remains is simply a sieve full, a life sustained by a series of holes. The candles we light, the rice we throw, the threads we pick, the hair that comes out in our brushes repeat us over and over. Like dots on dice and the useless luck that lives in them, we turn up everywhere. We are snake eyes, small potatoes. We save ourselves for seed.
Interesting piece. What was the inspiration?
Well, we were digging potatoes, and we got past the nice big ones that ended up in the wheelbarrow, and I had all these little ones, and so we harvested those, and I found myself at the sink scrubbing these tiny little potatoes and thinking, well, this is kind of nutty, but anyway, that was the inspiration. I mean, these poems are based on true stories.
Okay, all right.
yeah. Here's another one, actually,
okay.
Steve. I like writing in traditional forms as well as free verse, and the sonnet form especially I find challenging and fun to work in. Mm-hmm. That little 14-line, tightly iambic verse is a challenge, and it's fun. So this is a sonnet I wrote. When we bought our place, we planted a lot of native plants all around and kind of restored a natural habitat. So we have, chokecherry and dogwood, hawthorns, wild roses, all mm-hmm. this kind of thing. And we have a mammoth hawthorn bush now. And there was a little wild rose nearby that never thrived. Until one spring, we realized the rose had kind of migrated up closer to the hawthorn,
mm-hmm.
and was just beautiful.
Oh.
So this is a love sonnet.
Yeah, it sounds like
in the tradition of the sonnet.
The rose migrating to the hawthorn. Ooh, what
exactly.
happened there?
So this is called Rose Loves Hawthorn.
Right.
You can tell by the way she climbs all over him. See how she hangs on every word? He lets her have her way. He loves to be covered in her pale blossoms, that pink, the most tender thing he's ever worn. And later, her hips, as the temperature falls and Orion rises, so red and ripe, who on earth could resist that kind of fire when so little else survives this dropping off of summer flower and leaf? By November, he's forgotten almost everything. The woody thicket turns to bone and grief in icy light, the shape of years, the waiting, revealing how she matched him thorn for thorn, how twined together, each is less alone.
Ooh, okay. Rose Hawthorn. I have to write it down.
Rose loves Hawthorn.
but it's like, I was thinking, you know, in this day and age where folks name their children, you know, many unique names, Rose Hawthorn
yeah.
sounds pleasant.
It is.
You know, it's like it flows. And just listening to you, you know, read about, as you say, it's a love story, a natural love story, nature loving each other, two different types of no, I said the rose and the hawthorn, totally different, but they mix so beautifully.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm like, okay, I'm just visualizing this thing happening, looking out into a field, and like, whoa, man,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
I'd love to see this in like time lapse photography,
right.
where it show you how they move to get together.
Well, and this rose actually climbed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a wild rose is, you know, usually shrubbier, bushier.
Mm-hmm.
This rose is, you know, 12 feet tall, way up into this hawthorn.
Mm-hmm.
And when it blooms, you look into the hawthorn, and there's these beautiful pink,
roses.
You know, wild roses
Ooh.
Way up there. It's great.
Oh.
It's
oh.
wonderful.
I mean, with,
yeah.
again, just
yeah.
to see that.
It's the way we
you
live.
Know, to see that. I'm going to have to visit
You'll
you
You'll have
there
to come visit us.
And see this story. I want to see the story.
That's
and the
right.
facts here.
The story behind the poem.
The story behind the poem.
Well, it's a beautiful part of our state where we live. We're so lucky. It's just gorgeous. So here's a piece. We garden all season long. We work very hard. We grow lots of vegetables, lots of flowers. And this is a poem I wrote some years ago. I taught high school for many years in Kettle Falls, and I taught English, and my students covered a lot of poetry. We had a great time with poetry. And one poem that every year I taught to my ninth graders was Marge Piercy's great poem, To Be of Use. And this poem was somewhat inspired by Piercy's piece, To Be of Use. This is called Parts and Labor, after Marge Piercy. Don't ask me what I've been up to, because I'll tell you, and you'll be sorry you asked. I've been working all week for Sisyphus, digging up the iris bed, the big one on the south side of the garden, that piece of ground Job used to farm. It's not the boulders or boils this time. It's the quackgrass that has finally hacked through all the security systems. You know it's a rough neighborhood. Again and again, I plunge the spading fork into the fleshy mass of roots and strangled rhizomes, splitting the sod, breaking those gnarled hearts into pieces to replant later, after I untangle each fat, white, clinging cord of grass, one by one, carefully pulling and separating them from the tuber. The soil free falls in clods back into the bed, sighing. Earthworms likewise drop back to earth. When my Uncle Bob was dying of cancer, he planted irises on the bank above the pool. It killed me, the idea of him kneeling on the ground, a trowel in one hand, cigarette in the other, between chemo sessions, burying irises for a spring he wouldn't see. This week, Sisyphus is walking for the cure. He's in the pink, but thanks for asking. The spading fork mangles over and over a facsimile of myth. Later, I'll replant my prayer flags, purple, bronze, gold, white, and learn again the loyalty of that old habit, parts and labor, and the careful measure of work that is real.
The care of falseness, love that is real. Whew. I tell you, I'm getting a little bit, overwhelmed. It's like, but you mentioned Kettle Falls, and a while back there was an article in the newspaper about the Kettle Falls Library that won this award as like the best library something. Well, I'm going to have to go back there because I tore it out and I have it at home.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to double check, but I thought it was Kettle Falls because it was like they applied for this grant and
right.
got all these, super technical things and everything. And I'm like, because I remember going through Kettle Falls many, many years back,
mm-hmm.
but I haven't been since. But, there was something I said, I am going to have to go up to Kettle Falls, listening to you, and it's like the pieces starting to come back to my mind, and I'm like, okay, now I really have more than one reason to go up to Kettle Falls, because I was going to do that, but I didn't, but I have the piece, and I am right there in my little tray that I keep all my little scrap papers, for when I write, but we're going to have to talk a little bit more about this.
We have a wonderful library, and they just put a big addition on it, so really, in the Stevens County Rural Library System, which is a great library system, the Kettle Falls Library
is the gem.
It's kind of the gem because we've got this beautiful community room in there now.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned Todd Marshall earlier, and during his tenure, he read three times in our area.
Well, I'm going to have to come up there
and see if
I can read up there, too. I'm going to have to do that.
We'd love to have you.
I have to write and do what you have to do to get into the system.
Yeah, we
have to talk about some things offline here.
It's a wonderful resource we have, and we love our library. Regarding living in Kettle Falls and writing, I do most of my writing at the kitchen table, looking out a big window, and I'm looking out on some of the hawthorns and the dogwood, and then up towards Mingo Mountain. It's very beautiful. And so a lot of my poems have to do with things I see as I'm staring out the window, and all the different seasons of the year appear in the work, and lots of the, the plants and the weather and that kind of thing. And this next poem I'd like to read, I wrote a few years ago in early December. And I'm looking right out on a flower bed where I grow a lot of asters. And it's kind of messy in the winter, but the bird life out there is quite beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So this was a gazing out the window type of poem. It's called December 1st. It is trying hard to snow. The remnant asters explode this moment. Pale clusters prime for the seed specialists, the goldfinches, who have now arrived from the osier dogwood to feed and bob, nervous and quick, on the red-brown stalks, plucking fuzz from tiny cups where purple stars were shining in September. If I reached through the window, I could touch them, clothed now in their winter drab, the small birds and the spent perennials I won't cut back, but leave for seed. From low clouds, flakes sow the air. We must not trim and tame the world. The scatter of wings is a wild door.
Mm. Ooh, the scatter of winds is a wide door.
Ooh, yes,
I'm going to write that down, too. You see, you just keep reading, and I'm going to keep writing those neat lines that you have put out there, the scatter of winds.
Well, here's another one from The Window. We've only had this bird visit us one time, and this is a couple of winters ago when it was very cold. It's a northern shrike. You may be familiar with it, a very beautiful bird, but not terribly common up in our area.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, he came through and stayed a couple of days at our place. And the shrike has an interesting habit that I will describe to you in this poem. This is called The Butcher Bird. I don't know which is worse, you said, Catholicism or science. Better to be a marveler like Muir, who admired the world in a wild-ass storm from the top of a reeling Douglas fir. I clung with muscles firm-braced like a bobolink on a reed. The northern shrike is sleek and smart and saves something for later. He impales the mouse, hangs it like a rosary from the hawthorn spine, a sharp rack for a small executioner in a tiny mask. He picks at his meal, opens up a bloody bit, clever, clever fellow, engineering his neat table, then abandoning it for the pear tree in the orchard beyond the barn. This morning it is -3, and half a mouse hangs frozen on the hawthorn prong, its tail too long for what's left. Snow blows it sideways and in circles. The bird book says, on lean days, the shrike feeds from its larder, its song a subdued warble, though the shrike is usually silent in winter. I promise to save something, everything, if I'm lucky, for later, except my hyperbolic praise, my wild-ass grace at the table in the eye of the storm.
Mm-mm-mm. Well, folks, if you are just tuning in, this is the Spokane Open Poetry Program here at KYRS Medical Lake Spokane 88.1 and 92.3 FM. Folks, if you'd like to be a guest, all you have to do is call 509-747-3807 and leave your name and number, or go on the stream to www.kyrs.org, and you'll find Thin Air Community Radio Station, and you will find the Spoken Open Poetry Program, and just dash me an email and I'll make sure I get back in touch with you and have you be one of our upcoming guests, just like the one and only Lynn Rigney Schott. So, now that I've trampled your name, sorry about that. Let us continue on.
Okay. Let's see. Well, I just opened the book to a poem I wrote.
What is the name of the book, by the way?
The book is called Light Years.
Okay.
Light Years. And I chose the title for the manuscript because light in its various permutations and seasons appears frequently in the imagery of the poem. And the book also represents many years of writing for me. I mean, some of these poems go back 30, 35 years. And I finally got it together, as I said, with Dennis's help, to make a lovely book. And Grey Dog Press, I also want to give a shout out to Russ Davis at Grey Dog Press, because he did a great job putting this book together for me.
Fantastic.
It's lovely, yes.
You need that good editor.
And yes.
You have to,
Yep, and it's beautiful. It's just a lovely book. A friend of mine did the print that is on the cover. It's beautiful. It has echinacea flowers and kale. Ooh. Kale on the cover. How hip is that? This book is good for you. It's full of vitamins.
And minerals and everything. Because when you think kale, I said, oh, yes, when I go home, I've got to, get that bag of kale and eat something healthy, which is to say, we talk about the book. Where can someone pick up a copy?
Auntie's carries this book, actually, and Myers Falls Market in Kettle Falls, and also I have many copies myself. So
there it is. For anybody who's wishing to get this wonderful book, you've got a number of options. I'm sure probably it might be on Amazon as well sometime down the road.
It is
not.
Not going
to go that way.
I am a very low tech person, so we just. You got to come to the source. But Auntie's is a great source.
And everybody loves that bookstore, right? Which is not too far from the studio.
Yes.
All right. So we another good piece.
Okay. Here's a
piece. Not that they all are, but.
Thank you, Steve. This is one I wrote for my grandson when he was 5, and he's now 12. And it's got a little allusion to William Blake and his great poem of the same name. This is called Tiger, Tiger. For Lewis, has an epigraph by Robert Lowell. The fires men build live after them. When the 5-year-old boy helps light the bonfire, he knows a man can make a world explode. Every bright thing falls, brittle leaves, pumpkins rolling over to the knife, tamaracks losing their rusty shirts. When the wood is wedded to its old partner, the match, the boy steps back from the ring of river rock. He hears a forest crack and cry like a crazy pirate or a drunken bird. What was the forest disappears in brilliant motes, the way stars lose their fierce teeth, reeling into dawn. His small face is the last rose blooming before the scrape and fact of frost. How can the world, he wonders, balance on the thin dime he counts on, spinning through light and darkness, the fadeaway of silver, the symmetry of so beautiful and so terrible.
Well, we're at that point, as I mentioned before, we've got about another 2 minutes, so do you have a small one to get us into that zone?
I do. How about... My dad was a baseball player, and he actually played in Spokane.
Mm-hmm.
He was a professional ball player all his life, but his first team was the Spokane Hawks in 1938,
mm-hmm.
when he was a young man. And here's, I've written a number of baseball poems, and here's one that I wrote for my older daughter, Maggie, whose birthday is February 6th, which is the same as Babe Ruth's birthday.
This
is a little poem about my dad. It's called Souvenirs for Maggie. In 1928, my grandfather gave a baseball signed by Babe Ruth to my father, who was 10. Such balls traveled around by the dozen in the Babe's suitcase and arrived eventually in many small hands. Dad grew up on Frisbee Street in Oakland, and there were never enough baseballs in the neighborhood, so this one became a game ball, not a collector's item. By the end of a season, it was so scuffed up that the autograph just wore off the horsehide, disappearing under so many ground balls, so many slaps of the bat. But all those pitches, those double play balls, those afternoons in the sandlot, never faded, only sharpened his reflexes and his ambition and his boyish love of this game that became the indelible signature written all over my father's life.
So here's to baseball. May it always be played.
And springtime.
And springtime. And for Lynn Rigney Schott, I am Stephen Pitters, your host for this edition of the Spokane Poetry Program here at KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. And we'll see you again real soon. Lynn, nice having you on the show.
Thank you so much, Steve. I've really enjoyed
reading. And now we are out of here.